you very much. I might use the short time to introduce myself. My name is Kirsten, and I am working at the Center for Development Research in Bonn in Germany. The study that I present is a part of a larger research project that has been established 6 years ago and is going to run for another 4 years with the partners of the University of Bonn, the Örgen State University in Uzbekistan, and UNESCO in Uzbekistan. The partners in this study are Professor Nazar Ibragimov from the Cotton Research Institute in Tashkent, John Lammers, who is the coordinator of this big research project, and Professor Paul Fleck, who is also the director of the Center for Development Research. As I'm not sure that how familiar you are with the cotton in Central Asia, I would like to give you a brief background. You have to be aware that Uzbekistan, up to date, is the fifth largest world cotton producer, with an annual production of 3.8 million tons. It is also the second world largest exporter of cotton. So we have a production per hectare of 2.7 tons, and therefore cotton contributes quite a large amount to the national GDP. So cotton has a very high political and economic priority in the country. Up until now, cotton is still grown as a state order crop. That means that production targets are set by the government, that farmers have to produce a certain amount of tons per land. On the other side, the government still heavily subsidizes the inputs, which leaves only little incentives for farmers to actually do a sustainable management or cost-effective management. In 1991, the entire system changed. Uzbekistan became independent from the Soviet Union, and ever since, agrarian reforms are ongoing. That means especially the privatization of land, the turning of former collective farms, kolkhozes, into private land has really been ongoing, and the farmers, the newly independent farmers, are now facing a very different economic reality. Well, looking at the fertilizer recommendations in time, because fertilizer research has always been encouraged under Soviet regime and also in Uzbekistan now. In 1960, the recommendations were at around 120 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. The yield of that respective year were 2.7 tons. 26 years later, the recommendations, however, more than doubled to 250 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. But if you look at the yields, you will see that 2.9 tons is not that much of an increase. So immediately the question comes up, what happened to that amount of nitrogen that did not add to the yield? I did a pre-study in 2004 with farmer-managed trials in fertilizers, and we found that nitrogen is really the most limiting nutrient in that system, but the nitrogen use efficiency is really low, so we only have a 3 kilogram yield increase per nitrogen added. The farmers presently try to meet this nitrogen deficiency by applying the most affordable and the most available fertilizer, that is ammonium nitrate and ammonium sulfate. Urea or diammonium phosphate or other fertilizers that we know of are rather uncommon or very, very expensive. Only now in the last couple of years, urea has actually been really getting back into the market. Then we have to also think about the setting of Uzbekistan. It is located in the desert, especially the project is, and we have an annual rainfall that does not exceed 100 millimeters per year. And the high temperatures and high radiation and very low relative humidity cause the evapotranspiration to exceed the rainfall almost in all months throughout the year. So we are looking at an irrigated system in agriculture. However, the unreliability of the water supply leads to the farmers to open the gates as soon as there is water. And you can see in the back we have a lot of problems with excessive application of water. And at the same time, we also have a tradition of leaching prior to crop planting to leach some salts that might be in the soil down into the groundwater. So this system, keeping in mind, you would find a lot of losses somehow in the system with the fertilizers applied. So So the hypothesis when we came into that region was that the nitrogen recommendations are far too high with 250 kilograms per hectare. The use efficiency is low, and the fertilizer sources used at the moment are very likely to cause losses, so a different source and maybe also a different timing of fertilizer would be possible to reduce any losses. So money and fertilizers are supposed to be wasted. So the objective was to examine the fertilizer efficiency and the losses under the current management system, and then to optimize that use and trying to minimize any environmental impacts. So with this I come to the material and methods. This is a satellite image, a Terra Modis image from 2006, and you can see the northeast western part of Uzbekistan. It is the RLC that you see in the upper corner, and the red box is the region where the project is located. It's the Khwarezm region, which is still in the RLC basin. The research site is marked here with a black X. And the soil on the experimental field was a loamy textured soil with very little total organic carbon content. You can see it's 0.5% in the top 30 centimeters and a very low total nitrogen content of 0.07%. The initial mineral N content was not more than 20 kilograms per hectare. We established a nitrogen response trial with in a randomized block design with four replications, and the rates were 0, 40, 80, 120, and 160 kilograms of nitrogen. And we used three different combinations, diammonium phosphate with urea, a complete urea treatment, and one including ammonium nitrate, that is the one that the farmers presently apply. We had three splits, applying fertilizer before planting, at budding stage, and at flowering stage. We also had one treatment where we also changed the timings, but since the results were not significantly different, I will not show them here. For the rate of 120 kilograms per hectare, we also used labeled fertilizer, so-called N15, and you can see in the photo the microplots where at the respective time we applied the 15N. We irrigated five times throughout the season, that is a standard, and the total irrigation applied to the experimental field was 300 millimeters, which is really low in comparison to the recommended rate, which is 600 millimeters for that region. However, we had a groundwater table depth of 100 centimeters throughout the season, so we had quite a high contribution of capillary rise, and the plants did not experience any water problems. Of course, at harvest, we harvested the plants, we separated them, we determined all different factors, and we determined yield per pig and the total harvest, and I will show you the results in just a second. The plant parts then were analyzed with the mass spectrometer for N15, and since fiber and seeds are very difficult to grind, we pre-froze them with a freezer mill and then were able to analyze them as well. So the results, that is approximately the amount of cotton we harvested, and putting that into numbers, we were able to get around 4 tons from that area. And if you look at the asterisks, that is the significant lower yield for the lower nitrogen rate treatments. The 80, 120, and 160 fertilizer rates did not have any significant difference in yield. In the next slide, I would like you to look more into detail for the 120 kilogram nitrogen rate, comparing the different fertilizer combinations. I'm still talking about raw cotton yield, so not to confuse with glint yield. The total cotton yield for any of the combinations did not significantly differ. And if you look at the one with the red, that's the farmer's present treatment. The nitrogen use efficiency, however, was already increased in comparison to the pre-studies on the farmer-managed trials. And looking at the different picking times, we saw that the ammonium nitrate treatment was significantly higher in comparison to the other treatments for the first pick. For the second pick, we didn't have any differences, and for the third pick, the ammonium nitrate treatment was significantly lower. This is important to note because the farmers in Uzbekistan are paid according to pick. They will receive the highest amount of money for the first pick. So even though the total yields would have been the same, they would have received the highest amount of returns for the ammonium nitrate treatment. So where did the nitrogen go in the plant? We had the highest recovery in the seeds with 17%, followed by the leaves with 8%. And about 50% was recovered in the soil in the 0 to 20 centimeter profile. And in the next two slides, I will look a little bit more into detail on the seeds and on the 0 to 10 centimeter soil horizon. So looking at the in-season recovery for the seeds, you can see we had a significant increase throughout the season with having the highest recovery in the flowering stage, but there was no difference in fertilizer combinations. For the soil, we had the opposite trend. We could see the recovery decreased with time, being lowest for flowering stage. That all makes sense since the plant took up all the nitrogen. However, here we did find significant differences in the fertilizer treatments. We had the highest recoveries for the complete urea treatment. So the overall fertilizer recovery was surprisingly high. We were able to recover more than 80% of the fertilizer, and the highest recoveries were for the complete urea treatment. And we assume that this is mainly due to our very low irrigation rates, since we had mainly an upward movement of groundwater rather than having a downward leaching trend. So coming back to the hypothesis that I showed initially, we had the N recommendations were too high. Yes, we can agree they are too high. We still have to figure out what would be the economic optimum there. The use efficiency is low. Yes, that is right. We have seen there is a potential to increase that to some extent. However, the irrigation management is very vital in this respect. Different fertilizer sources can reduce the losses. This is the most promising combination would be the complete urea treatment. The timing did not have any significant effect. And the nitrogen management can be optimized. We are at the moment doing economic calculations for that. And as an outlook, I just would like to add that we are now putting all this data into a crop model, trying to look at different management scenarios where we have higher irrigation rates, where we have higher fertilization rates, and then to quantify the losses via leaching and denitrification. And with that, I am at the end of my presentation, and my thanks does not only go to my colleagues in Uzbekistan, but also to the German Ministry for Education and Research and the Robert Bosch Foundation who funded this project, and also myself. Thank you very much for your attention. Yes, thank you very much. That is a very good question. Obviously, we are in an irrigated system, so water plays the essential role there. The project is really large. We have a couple of hydrologists working in that, looking into the different levels of irrigation on the regional level as well as on a field level. We have had a friend of mine, a colleague of mine, is sitting there. She finished her PhD on field water applications and efficiencies and a salt balance. So yeah, we are looking into that, and we're now trying to get also into water saving options in terms of drips or other irrigation methods.